Hi everybody, my name's Derek Urban, I'm a real alcoholic. Thank Chris for asking me to come and speak, it's a pleasure. Quite a trip. Thought it was going to be shorter, but it turned out longer. I identify myself as a real alcoholic. That's not to imply that anybody here is a fake alcoholic. I'm sure there's none of those here. That's my job in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my group's primary purpose and my aim, my one aim, is to help you identify that one thing, to see it, to understand what it is, and to realize whether or not you are one of us. It's funny, I had a guy at my local meetings who came up to me, first guy ever. It's been a long time. I've been identifying myself as a real alcoholic, and he comes up to me and says, "What do you think, you're better than everybody? It's just this real alcoholic crap, man." But he got more than he bargained for because I went into a little discussion with him, a little Q&A about what a real alcoholic is. And turned out to be a great conversation. I made a new friend. It's funny, it reminded me, he came right up to me, he had no qualms about it. And that's a New Yorker for you. A buddy of mine worked out in California for a while, and he said, it's a breath of fresh air to be back in New York. See, Californians will say one thing to your face and you turn around and stick a knife in your back. At least in New York, they'll stick the knife right in your chest. That was a breath of fresh air for him. It's good to take a trek to come here. It's what I grew up on. I've been down southeast and northeast for Northeast Regional Forums, NARASA. Different state conventions. I grew up pretty much in the Baldwin group in 43. Came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 21. And the Baldwin group is the second oldest group on Long Island after the Garden City group. And that group was started by a fellow named Yev Gardner. Yev started the National Council on Alcoholism with Marty Mann, a handful of other New Yorkers. My group, we had a Class B trustee from the 40s, Dick. He was one of the original Grapevine staff. The group boasts now three delegates from its ranks. The guy who started the intergroup office, the local intergroup office. First woman, Patty, started a women's meeting in the local hospital. So in this group, there was a lot of guys who really knew Bill Wilson. Took commitments in Knickerbocker, Bellevue, and Towns Hospital, and the auxiliary group in Towns. And there was an air of just complete freedom, enlightenment. It's very light in the room. A lot of cops and firemen, stockbrokers, bondsmen, and a lot of Irish. That's what struck me. It was Irishmen who had 20, 30, 40 years sober. Just blew me away. That these guys, who I knew from my neighborhood, were all heavy drinkers. And that was the thing you learned how to do, was to hold your drink as an Irishman and a man. Eventually I lost all control and I was a disgusting mess. I was an arrogant, belligerent, loudmouth, foul mouth. Sloppy, disgusting, drunk. My story, I got kind of like a Spike Lee story. There's a middle portion with a low valley, and then it has a happy ending, of course, because I'm here sharing my experience with you. For anybody who's new, that's my job, is to help you identify whether or not you're a real alcoholic. And my experience is a spiritual experience. And I tell everybody that I work with, there's one thing I need to do. Is to help you identify whether or not you're one of us, a real alcoholic. And there's only one thing you should want to have in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the one thing we've been pitching since 1935, is power. The message of God's power, which is going to release us from alcoholic insanity and perhaps separate us from alcohol for good. So I tell guys that I work with, the one thing you should want to have is expressed in our 12th principle, is the one thing that I've had, is an awakening. I awakened to this spirit that I wasn't conscious of, I had an experience. I keep re-experiencing the Spirit by living in 10, 11, and 12. Because step 10, I continue what I started. So it's going to take me through the revolutions of 4 through 7, perhaps 9 if I step on somebody's toes. And it asked me to be a worker for God. In and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's funny, my wife's going to have... It's like the wedding anniversary. She's 21 years sober in October. And she said, do you ever like lose track and like not pray? I said, I can't not think about God. I can't, not based on the gift that He's given me. Not just the release from alcoholism and alcoholic insanity, but also this consciousness of Him, this Creator, that I know created me and recreated me, you know, after I made that third step decision. It keeps continually changing me for the betterment of His purpose and plan. I came in 87 and went through rehab and got sober. And I just, my experiences of is one of, there were always guys reading a big book around. There was big book, Phil Roman, Richie Duffy in Seafield in a rehab. We used to meet in Phil's house, and then eventually we had Joe and Charlie tapes, and then a guy from New York, Billy, started bringing Joe and Charlie into the Big Apple Big Book seminars. That's all I knew and know, was pitching the message from the book, pitching the message of God's power from the book. And I made it to the Baldwin group, and but first I was in rehab, and that's where I met my first sponsor, Tom, who passed away, and started writing inventory in my second month in this rehab, CK Post, out in Suffolk County. And took it through to 9, round of amends, and a second inventory without amends, another inventory with amends. In the Baldwin group, there was always, they caught shit because they started the group in 1946 for starting the first step meeting in the area. I think that was around the 50s after the book came out, a little while after the book came out. But there was a feeling in the group that if you did not live in the 36 principles and all three legacies, it was like a three-sided stool, and that's the way it was described to me, that there was something lopsided, that, you know, if all three sides were not balanced, if you missed one side, the stool could fall over. And I was, you know, taught and experienced that all 36 principles, 29 are spiritual, and the remainder in the concepts has spiritual overtones. I describe it as this, based on my experience in group, district, and area service. The steps are the hand tools as described by the founder, and the traditions are the power tools, and the concepts are the heavy machinery. It was great. I'll share my experience in my current group, the Primary Purpose Group in Lynbrook. I'm no longer a member of the Baldwin group. But I'll get back to my story. I'm trekking along. I had every commitment you can think of, and I'm working with guys, pitching the message from the book. And the insane idea started to take root again after 11 years, pretty much 10 and a half years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a general service rep, DCM. It's a night book coordinator for the local intergroup office. I was sponsored to go into meetings, but I just thought maybe I was too young, came in too young, was forced in through the courts, perhaps I could drink again. So I started cutting ties with working with others. Said, I'm going to try this out. So after 11 years, I got bombed. But from that experience, God has made me a better servant. I was Big Book Derek from the Baldwin group, you know. I got sober in a group where all these old timers were. And the one response that I got from the people in my area was, is it true? And I can't believe it, that I got drunk. I knew people that actually doubled up on meetings because they heard I got drunk. whatever that's worth. I like to run right through this to get to the point where I was at in 1998, where I started to suffer from the insane idea that I can control and enjoy my drinking again, or somehow, some way, shape, or form, I'd beat the game. And I'd be a normal drinker again. I wouldn't be abnormal and alcoholic. I'd be able to drink. what was great about that experience was I had a head full of big book, whole lot of experience with the concepts and the traditions in general service. Had written inventory, taken inventory through to amends. But I suffered from the insane idea that I would control and enjoy the alcohol again. And I drank 6 times in a 10-month window, and it was like a Big Ben Tower, bong, 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 bong. And every time I drank, I knew, you know, it could be impending doom. Because I had seen the guys through the years slit their wrists, hang themselves, jump in front of trains, jump in front of cars, overdose on pills. And I was genuinely scared. I was afraid for my life. So I drank once and I was able to stop. I drank again and I got shit-faced. And then I drank again. I stopped. But my body said, wait a minute. Where are you going? And the beast was alive after 11 years. Everything in the text kept coming to life. It was like Neo in the Matrix. All of a sudden, everything just started to come down. I'm like, oh my God. You know, I felt it. I stopped, but my body just kept haunting me the rest of the night. And then I knew I screwed up. You know, I was on my stairs looking at all my books. And my first service sponsor was one of the first two archivists in southeastern New York. And I had all this like stuff on the history of AA. You know, I was all in. I was all in. I wanted to stay stopped, and I couldn't stay stopped. I drank again. And I drank again. I didn't want to drink again. I did not want to drink again. You know, I share this with guys that I work with. I said, pride will kill you long before alcohol will. Because I've seen pride kill a lot of guys who aren't willing to just submit to the simple process and start doing what it's required to have this experience. So within in that window, through questions and answers from my sponsor, Rashid, who's a dictionary reading Muslim, gave me a great gift. He actually dragged me out to Hackettstown, New Jersey to meet these guys that were doing this retreat. We went through the steps in a weekend, just pretty much inventory. He said, Derek, he said, what's alcoholic sanity? And I said, what? He said, what's alcoholic sanity? I'm looking at him, my head is twisting like a dog listening to a whistle. What are you talking about? He said, well, what's alcoholic insanity? I said, the obsession to control. He said, right. So what's alcoholic sanity? I still didn't know. He said, well, if alcoholic insanity is the obsession to control, he says, what happens when you try to control your drinking? I said it led to repeated lack of control. And he said, what happens when you try to stop when you started? I said, I couldn't stop when I started. He said, what happens when you try to moderate? I said, I can never moderate. He said, what about regulate? I said, I can never regulate. He said, apparently you couldn't stay stopped altogether. I said, yeah. He said, that's alcoholic insanity, thinking that I have that type of the power to stop, stay stopped, moderate, and regulate, or that I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking and win out. He said, so what's alcoholic sanity? And it started to come to me. That's my first step experience, when I could admit I've lost all control, that I will never be able to stop, I'll never be able to moderate, stay, stop, or regulate. Right in that definition was my first step experience. In all that language, it tells me I have no power. And that was my experience right there. And he made it that simple. So alcoholic sanity and my first step experience were inversely proportional. I had to admit I had no power to stop, stay, stop, moderate, or regulate. I was powerless to choose whether I will or won't drink. If I'm powerless to choose whether I will drink, that means I can't stay stopped or won't drink, either way. And right there was my experience. And I needed that right then and there in Hackettstown, New Jersey, on Schooley's Mountain. That type of question just nailed me right between the eyes, because I had all this experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, working with guys, working with these traditions and the concepts. That simple question really struck home to me. And within that moment, everything became clear. That was my moment of clarity. With all my experience, I had no power to start or stop this thing. And it was clear that I would never be able to start or stop myself of my own will and my own accord and my own power. If I'm deluded into thinking I start and stop myself, I'm still suffering from alcoholic insanity. That's what I've experienced, and it's been verified by the language of the founders. So I don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to try and stop myself from that which I could never stop myself. I am powerless. God has released me from alcoholic insanity, this obsession to think I could ever control and enjoy my drinking. And that's just what happened in one fell swoop. Can't describe it. I got no words for it. My sponsor said, she said, if you had a spiritual experience, quote unquote, and you can describe it, chances are it wasn't a genuine spiritual experience. At that time, I had defective emotional and mental natures lifted out of me. Greed, envy, and pride. I can honestly say that attributed to me blocking my awareness of God's presence at the time. I was raised on Long Island. There's a lot of money on Long Island, but I was on the other side of the tracks. Last of seven kids, Irish family. That's a small Irish family. And whoever, you know, the guys whose father showed up for them and were there for them, I envied them, you know. And eventually when they grew up, their fathers, the parents started giving them things. I was envious of that and jealous. And then as I got older and Alcoholics Anonymous came here at 21, I started to pursue the American dream, and just money became my eye of power, you know. So these three operative defective natures took control of me when money became my God, and I was aggressive and really started to take on these negative attitudes and these negative emotions. I'm leery to look at. I'm real cautious, and I'm real particular about my relationship with God and God's presence and what I'm doing for God. And thanking Him with not only my lips, but my life. And the consciousness of His power and grace and His love in my life. Because my experience is that if I don't, you know, keep in condition, spiritual condition, that it may or may not lead to alcoholic insanity. And it may or may not lead to the drink of a spree. I've seen guys hang out here whose fifth steps I've listened to. I hung out here for a little while, blocking out God's grace and just running on my own steam, and then floated in alcoholic insanity for a little bit, and then came the drink of the spree. What struck me in the big book was Bill Wilson's story, where he's in the Mayflower Hotel, and in his own hand he says he was going to drink, but he didn't drink, and he says his sanity was restored, but he didn't drink. Yeah, but that, I understand that. And I can suffer from alcoholic insanity, obsession to control for quite a while. And that may or may not lead to the drink of the spree. But floating around in this position is a deadly business for an alcoholic. That's from my own experience and my observation of others and listening to fifth steps. So from right there, this power that I tapped into, I made a decision, the third step decision. The language is, if you have decided you want what we have, well, what is it that we have? Well, we feel as real alcoholics that we're beyond human aid. Apart from divine help, we need this power of God. So if you've decided you want what we have, this spiritual experience, and you're ready to take certain steps because you've identified what you are or are not, either you'll leave as one of our friends or you'll stay and say, I am one of those, this thing I must have. And you'll seize these principles so you have this very same experience that I had. Those certain steps of 4 through 9 and then living in 10, 11, 12. It's that simple. That's my number one job right here, to help you identify whether or not you drink like us. And then if you want help. From right there, man, I started writing inventory. And I had a fifth step prepared with my sponsor, and in that mountain in Hackettstown, there were a bunch of guys that were 12 step, by Clarence, a handful, Schneider, who was the home brewmeister. My sponsor asked me, he says, is there anything that's on your heart that you're holding back? And there was nothing. You know, I purged myself. And these guys prayed over me. It's the first time that ever happened to me. And something happened again on that mountain when these guys prayed over me. And I was an ordained Buddhist in a Rinzai sect of Zen Buddhism at the time, practicing, helped start and open a Zendo. But right there, I turned my will and my life over to God, the God of my church, the God of my upbringing. That's who I met that day. I never met him before. And that was the most profound experience I ever had in my life. So I knew who I was and what my purpose was. See, I was going to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, work with the homeless, do this, do that. I didn't want to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to drink again. I wanted to be like normal people. But I find that this is the best thing I could do for my community. You know, forget about thanking God with my life. But one of the best things we can do for community is to get, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts, two real alcoholics and real drug addicts off the street and help them repair their lives with God's aid. So I did that fifth with my sponsor, and he asked me if I was holding anything back or had anything on my heart. Nope. And they prayed, and these guys prayed over me, and then I went home, you know, and that was a new experience. Because here I am, there's this guy with all the service experience pitching a big book, and people didn't like me pitching that book, I'll tell you that. But it was one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had. People were like afraid of me, like they were going to catch something. It was the weirdest thing. God made me more effective because the text started to come alive even more so. That's the earmarks of the symptomatic behavior of a real alcoholic. If you're slipping, you know, if I say, oh, he drank because, or she drank because, I've answered the riddle that the founders couldn't answer. You know, if I think there is a reason I do drink or don't drink, that's still a symptomatic behavior of alcoholic insanity. So God has made me effective in working with guys who have or have not drank or reaching a sober bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous. After that experience, I had guys with 10, 15 years coming up to me, stark raving sober. You know, they hadn't drank, but they were still stark raving sober, asking me to work with them. But more so, cats that were just slipping and in and out, and the group's prize slippy. And I had something. God made me more effective within that willful experience that I had, bout of willfulness that I had within that period, which led to the drinking spree. So if you're slipping, you're not a second-class AA citizen who just doesn't get it. You're the real alcoholic. You're the guy that we're here for, or gal, the person that's slipping and can't stop. Yeah, feeling these little phrases around, don't drink and go to meetings. If I can don't drink, that was my plight prior to drinking. And if I can don't drink, I wouldn't come to AA meetings. And I hear this, don't drink no matter what. I'm Irish. I drank no matter what. And if you wake up an Irishman, that's a trigger. Believe me when I tell you. I think the one thing I can convey tonight to anybody who's new is you're not going to stop yourself, and none of us are going to stop you. How many people came here with power to stop drinking? How many hands are going to go up? None. How many people restored themselves from alcoholic insanity? How many hands are going to go up? None. So where did all this power come from that restored us to sanity? It's out there. God wants you to take it and be with Him in relationship to do His work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have this different slant on the sixth and seventh step. You know, I had a dictionary reading Muslim sponsor who passed away a couple of years ago. But we look at adverbs and adjectives, and we look at the definitions and shortcomings and character defects. And the way I learned, and most of my spirituality in the AA Jenner comes from Queens County, like, some real hard neighborhoods, real simple people. Pretty simple. I turn my will and my life over to God. You know, my will is my will and my life is my life. And I can sit in a basement with the character defects that I suffer from and not interact with anybody, but I still have those defects. They're still a part of me. These character defects, I ask to remove it or remove from me. Then a shortcoming, as I learned it and experienced this, is just I set a new ideal in inventory with sex ideals, and it says we should do that with every problem, so I set a new ideal with my inventory with these defective emotional and mental natures. I just don't want to come short of the mark when I'm serving God and His purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I have this new goal, and if I fall, which the founders say is going to happen, they're going to crop up again, and I can tell you from my experience, my defective characteristics have popped up. But if I start the day with a new goal and a new ideal, if I come short of that mark, that ideal, at least I can start anew and take inventory at the end of the day and move forward. And I say, you know, how it works, everybody that I hang around with, we pretty much know it's how God works. That's the way we describe that chapter. You know. Sometimes I'll say, I don't know how it works, you know, exactly. And I have some guy, it's a chapter, how it works. I never saw that before. I don't. But that's pretty much it. That's the how and why of it. And the chapter into action is really the action of God's grace in my life. That's all it is. I have to permit God to come into my life and make that decision to turn my will and my life over to Him. So if my attempts at control led to repeated lack of control and I can't stop, stay, stop, moderate, or regulate, then I'm a real alcoholic. I need to make that decision as far as Alcoholics Anonymous is concerned. Start writing this inventory. I was fortunate enough to do a workshop with Mitch Klein, and he had a book from the Peabodyists. They originally had two columns, and then Bill busted it up into three, and then we track it down to fear. If you're not familiar, I'm resentful at the cause, and it affects mine, but you know what? What it comes down to is they tricked me into looking at my self-serving and self-seeking behavior when I write a list of resentments, because who the hell am I to resist, resent anybody after I ran through everybody's life and just created havoc? That's the realization I had when I made that list of resentments. And the causes, you know, I was just self-serving. Everything revolved around me and what I wanted and who I was. And I can honestly say I was afraid. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had two different belts and two different systems of martial arts. I was eating tuna fish out of the can and raw vegetables. I was working in landscape construction. And I would go to the gym for 2.5 hours, and then I would go to the dojo for 3 hours. And that was 6 days a week. And my life was led by fear. I was this frightened little kid. I was about 20 pounds heavier, lean mass. I'd go out and get ripped and start fights in local gin mills. And it was all fear-based. I was in that gym, I can honestly say, because I was living a fear-based life. I was a frightened kid in a grown man's body. And that intimidation factor, this who I think I am, who are you messing with? You know, who do you think you are? I'll crush you like a bug. I'll kick you in the head from right here. You know, that type of attitude. And it was all, I was a frightened little kid. And with that initial couple of rounds of inventory to the last rounds, that jealousy, envy, and greed, that's who I was. I lived in that. And I continued on in that, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was underlying. And it was like Bacchus boomerang, you know, came back to haunt me. You know, it's odd. So that's my sixth and seventh. So I have these defective emotional and mental natures, and I know what they are. I'm cognizant of them. You know, we have a daily inventory in our text. in a nightly review, and I'm going to tie this into what I'm sharing about my fourth step. They asked us the same questions in our nightly review that they asked us in the fourth step. Or am I afraid, dishonest, self-seeking, and selfish? So my commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous and my commitments to working with newcomers have helped me exercise the very opposite, that new ideal, so I don't come short of that mark or that new ideal. I've been able to be selfless, self-sacrificing, faithful, and honest. And I'm usually not honest when I'm alone. I need people to check me, and God also. But I fall forward in faith. I don't live in fear now. I fall forward in faith. I've had too much resonant and concrete experience with God as I understand Him, both with my personal experience and in Alcoholics Anonymous in observation of others, to not believe in God and not fall forward in faith. You know, and I have a firm conviction that He can remove any defect of character that He so chooses. He's released me from a mental scourge and a physical scourge, right? Alcohol, insanity, and the allergy or the bodily cravings. Isn't He powerful enough to remove our defects and our shortcomings so we can serve Him? No, I have that belief and I have that faith. So, that's all I'm asked to do is fall forward in faith, be selfless and self-sacrificing and honest in Alcoholics Anonymous. And practicing the second legacy, the 12 traditions at the district and area level has helped me do that. So 8 and 9, I have a great experience. It's a wild experience. This one guy that I, 7th grade, and this was an incident that I didn't track in those inventories. I had an incident where I beat a guy up and, you know, it haunted me after I drank and I wrote that inventory again. It popped up. And that guy I hadn't seen since the 7th grade. I don't know how long ago it was. I have a time frame though. So within the same time frame, I had this list of amends. I saw 8 people. I have the names written in my notebook. 8 people that I hadn't seen in 18 to 25 years. That I went to elementary school with. Not high school, elementary school when this incident occurred. And this is the guy who I was most jealous toward, and he's actually a doctor now. God bless him. What was wild was I was in a 9-step meeting, and this girl, Geraldine, that I grew up with popped up in the meeting, in a 9-step meeting, who I hadn't seen, and I had to be 21, 22 years. So I always thought I could write out inventory, you know, and, you know, magically pray it away and ask to remove it like God was a helper, or I could order up the grace of God like a pizza, you know. Then he started to show me his power. I started running into these people one by one by one. And not only that, I ran into the guy's father 3 times in a row, who I hadn't seen in forever. So I always thought that, you know, if I did certain things would happen, and God showed me His power. What was interesting, I was engaged at the time to my wife, Miriam, and she was sober. And we knew people in Alcoholics Anonymous. We were a couple getting engaged. We knew other couples. We were involved in general service and working with others. And we had friends in common. And what struck me was the words of the founders, those we affect directly or indirectly. I had affected those people, our peers in Alcoholics Anonymous, indirectly. You know, most would say, oh, you know, you're an alcoholic, you drank, that's what we do. It's the most natural thing for alcoholics to do is to drink. But I had a list of people that I thought were affected by my behavior, and I approached them. There were 2 couples, an individual, a couple other people. The one guy, this old-timer, Richie, who loved my wife long before I started to love her, and who she got sober in the same home group with him. His wife Joni is a member of Al-Anon. I went and made the approach to him, and he said, "You're damn right. I was affected. I was scared for you. I was scared for Miriam, for her life, that maybe she would drink again." It was uprooting to him, and I affected him, and I made an amends to him. I apologized for that. You know, and there were similar experiences with my peers in AA. You know, it wasn't just like, "Oh, you're just a drunk. It's what we do." I had affected people, and I had to make right. And that's something that strikes me, is that any amends that I've had has nothing really, it may be because of my drinking, but it really has nothing to do with my drinking. As far as the other person on the other side of the fence is concerned, all they see is that I caused a harm against them. My alcoholism, my alcoholic drinking has nothing to do with me setting right or wrong I've committed in a sense. I don't think they'll look at that. So those were some interesting experiences, and my eyes were opened, wide open. They were wide open. I saw that I had become self-serving in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not committed, and I was not practicing the spiritual principles in the second legacy or the third, taking a back seat. Of course, I wasn't working with others because I cut my ties and I wanted to drink normally and sanely again. Needless to say, it didn't happen because I'm here with you. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I've recaptured that spirit and that experience I had with these old guys in my old home group, the Baldwin group. If I was in my own will still, I'd be a member of the Baldwin group. But I'm not. My friend Sean, who he moved to Carolina, he started this group, Primary Purpose Group, in Limbrook. That's where I'm a member. We meet on Tuesdays. My home group's meeting tonight for a beginner step series, followed by a big book experience. And then Thursday we have a pitch meeting, step pitch. He said, "Why don't you come along?" It was only about a handful of people. I said, "Yeah." And we just started this meeting a few years ago. It's doubled once, it's doubled again, and then it's folded again. So we have anywhere from 70 to 100 people in the room every Tuesday, mostly newcomers. And what's great about this group is it's got a vibrancy and a health to it, because all the pieces are in place, so to speak. We have a DCM, we have people involved in general service, but we have several people that hold meetings in local detoxes, big book meetings, big book studies, sober houses. So we have a healthy inflow of newer people, newer members. And we actually give out little pocket edition big books at our beginner meeting for anybody that wants them. And that's what we do. So that's my practice, is working with others. And that's my main aim and purpose, is to become an integral, a vital part of that group. As my sponsor and grand sponsor used to say, you don't go to a meeting and steal. Sharing is a reciprocal process, and that's what I do. I show up. And I've got a little added experience to share with the members. And the group has taken structure and form. Principles are in place. We've already had two inventories, group inventories. The group is only a few years old. Which is very healthy. And what's great about this is I've been an instrumental part of building up and helping participate in a group whereby now there's anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen people working with other people with the basic text outside the meeting or down in the basement. That just is great to me. And we're supporting the General Service Office by handing out these books. We have a full complement of literature, all four racks. And our sponsees are growing up in 12 traditions and not getting stuck on page 164 and getting to have the grand experience in 12 traditions and 12 concepts in world service. So that's what we do. And that's what I've been privileged to be a part of the last few years. again, I'd be stuck on the nostalgia of the Baldwin group, and I'd be in my own will and be there and trying to, you know, put a broken wheel on an old cart. But God has really fired me up for Him and for new guys and gals and for Alcoholics Anonymous. So 10-10, it's pretty much continue what I started. You know, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. That means I need a manager, and I have a new manager. Right? I've been restored to sanity by Him. That's how I know I'm recovered. You know, I didn't really have anything to do with it. I just surrendered to this lifestyle, and He restored me from alcoholic insanity. Made that decision. Become an example of His will, His power, His love, and His way of life. My will and my power got me drunk. My way of life got me stark raving sober. I had to admit that I had no power in order to find power. Right? Make that decision. Write down that inventory. Do you know that the chapter, How It Works, written by Bill Wilson, is one of the most specific chapters as to what to do? He describes the most out of all the other chapters what exactly we should do. And into action, follow by that. Tells me exactly what I should do. What's interesting to me is that all the original city centers, if you wrote the foundation office prior to publishing the book, you got a letter, but then all you got was a book. And a lot of the groups in the original city centers were founded by one person who had a book, who perhaps did their fifth step with their rabbi, a priest, or a shrink, and they went out and 12 steps of it. There was one guy who Bob worked with, kicked him out, and it took them almost a year to find somebody that would eventually stick with. They just had their book. Well, they had the 6-point word of mouth program. You know? So it can be done. It's an added plus that we have people that are familiar with the textbook. You know, and that there's always been two sides of the aisle. Bill Wilson uses the language when California, there was an area in California that was failing. He said those who used the more orthodox methods of the book went into that area and were able to found a group. And the other language is book converts. So they've been around for a long time since the inception of AA, Big Book folks. But that's what the book is for. It's for you to have this experience and make a decision, a conscious decision, to turn your will and your life over to God as you understand Him, not as I understand Him. And then you get to reinvent yourself by have God recreate who you are. So you can better serve Him and find freedom from this scourge of alcoholism. So I go through this process and I get to 10. And what does it ask me? Continue to take inventory when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. Well, I just continue what I started. I made a fearless and moral inventory of myself and thorough, right? So I just continue what I started. And my sponsor used to say the most important word and most overlooked word in the fourth step is moral. Or morality, my sense of what is right and what is wrong. You know, I have a little sidebar for this, though. I had three guys not too long ago, alcoholics, mind you, having a discussion about an amends somebody needed to make about money. And of course, there were like three or four different ideas about how much and when and who. So each person's sense of morality may be different. But I say this, and this came from a great spiritual practitioner I know. He said, everybody's born with a knower. You know what you should do and what you shouldn't do. You know, what's that based on is I know what I don't want done to me. Right? And I don't want to do to other people what I don't want done to me. But unfortunately, I've done a lot to other people that I didn't want done to me. And that's what I owe an apology for. So that's a real good way to get a sense of where the inventory should go. I continue what I started. Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, I just continue what I started. You know? And how to do that at night, how to take a nightly review, it's just taking me back through what it asked me in the fourth step. It's all it's asking me to do. 11 is profound for me because I used to be able to, you know, I still can sit for a whole day, meditate, chicken taza, or have a koan. How do you realize God? By looking at a pine tree, or where is the spirit in the butterfly's wings? Realize God, or the infamous one. What's the sound of one hand clapping? There it is. You know, so I sat with that junk for a long time, but now I have a bit of a different slant. I have contemplative prayer. I meditate on a sentence or a chapter in the big book, the step book, the words of the founders, the Bible. And I sit with that. I work in sanitation back in New York in the town of Hempstead, so I have a lot of time in the morning. And there's a lot of repetition involved, if you know what I mean. Just doing this pretty much all morning. And I say the prayers from my faith over and over and over, and that actually locks me in for the rest of the day, and I don't lose track. And I'm a licensed realtor too, so I head to the office around noon. And I haven't gotten caught up in it. I really haven't. I'm working residential now. A sponsee of mine is working there in a shop that does nothing but sell foreclosed properties. Busy, to say the least. But prior to this, I was floundering, working in commercial finance. And the market blew up. I was placing debt on hotels and motels and apartment buildings. And I had a deal put together, and this is how I know I was past the greed and the envy and the want, and I wasn't serving myself because I didn't hang on tooth and nail on a deal that was 6 months down the road and reports this thick and a file this thick on a $340,000 commission. I watched go down the toilet. I was okay with it. I was really okay with it. I didn't care. And that's the freedom I've gotten, not only from alcoholic insanity, that release, but also the greed and the envy of what other people have and what they're doing. Nobody's business is my business. My wife and I, we have a beautiful apartment on the water. It overlooks the Atlantic Ocean. We love each other, you know. I love God. We love God. She has about 15, 20 women at the house doing a big book meeting right now. This thing is taking an unwieldy shape. I don't know what's going to happen with it. I said, you're going to have to start a meeting. But all the married guys on the other side, we're like going out, you know, hanging out. It's a fun time. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that, everything that I have. The gift, God gave me the gift of life, and He gave me the gift of a new life in AA, and a purpose to serve people in my community. What's great about my group is we got, you know, there's an underlying joke with my home group. It's the best CA meeting on Long Island. It's an AA meeting, but there's a lot of real alcoholics and real drug addicts. So I'm able to work with younger people, and our group has been really an instrument, and we have a lot of young people in the group, a lot of young people, which when you were young, you were like 25 and older and 87. So my prayers are of my faith, and they're repetitious, and that actually keeps me locked on what my purpose is and who God is to me. And meditation, I always say this, the best thing to do, just sit on a couch for 15 minutes, you know, and 20 minutes, 30 minutes, half hour. You can meditate on a step, chapter in a big book. I had a Tai Chi teacher years ago. He said, I ever see people running around saying, oh, I don't want to do nothing. I don't want to do nothing. I don't want to do nothing. He said, the hardest thing to do is no thing. You know, once you start to meditate, you're going to quiet your mind. The first thing the mind starts doing is starts running and rambling. You know, you could sit there for 5 minutes. Oh, I got this check to write. I got this bill to pay. That thing's over there. It should be put away. Oh, I got to call this person. You know, and all those little chatterings, actually, those disturbances, annoyances, are meaningless in the purpose that I know I have to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. Staying present, staying cognizant, staying conscious of the Spirit of God. You know, on the drive here, it was an hour and a half till I got to the Verrazano. Most people would have blew a gasket, you know. I'm just breathing in and out, breathing in and out, breathing in and out, breathing in and out. That's all I was doing, because I knew that this is where I need to be. And then I'm serving and loving the God who released me from the alcoholic insanity by coming here and thanking Him with my life for coming here. And I've had the awakening, and you know, I say this is the truth in my life. I admitted I had no power in order for power to enter my life, and God released me from alcoholic insanity. So now I just ask this power to come into every area of my life. And I'll share this. I shared it years ago. I was afraid of the power of God's power. Because the more power I asked into my life, the more release I asked for, the more of me would have to go. You know, I was afraid of losing me and who I was and my own little world. You know? It may sound complicated, but it's real simple. And you need a guide, you know, whether it's a priest and you in the book or your sponsor. My conviction is that if God wants to get a man or a woman sober, He's going to get a man or a woman sober. If He wants them to go to work for Him. I've seen the most unlikely and the group's prize, Slippy, Stick and Stay. And the old guys, when Eddie, that was a pallbearer at his funeral, 47 years sober, he slipped for the first 8 years, in and out. Another guy, Patty's got he's got to be reaching the 40-year window ceiling. He's used to hide a bottle outside the old bowl room for 5 years, in and out. So, whether you drink or you don't drink, you keep coming back. Because it's an open door policy. Hopefully I've helped you identify whether or not you're a real alcoholic and that you're powerless to stop yourself and that your attempts at control are going to continue to lead to repeated lack of control. And you're not going to ever be able to stop, moderate, or regulate of your own will, your own accord, and your own power. And all I ask you is to help us step into God's will and God's power and serve Him. And that's it. And clear away all these things that are haunting you so you can have a free mind. So when you meditate, things from the past don't haunt you. You pray, things don't haunt you. So you can better serve Him, because there's a lot of forebodings from the founders in the basic text, and there's also a lot of promises. There's one promise: is nothing so sure as immunity from the drink as intensive work with others. So our job is to help you make that decision and get into inventory and get into 10, 11, and 12 as fast as humanly possible. So you could start working with others and find this freedom. That's all I have to share. Thanks for letting me share.